And now, live from Tribune Tower, Chicago, this is the WGN Radio Theater with Carl Amari.
Dragnet.
The Jack Benny Program.
I'm that man. Matt Dillon, United States Marshal.
Yes, it's Maxwell House Coffee Time, starring George Burns and Gracie Allen.
Good evening, friends of the Inner Sanctum.
We offer you Escape.
It's time once again for another comedy episode of Our Miss Brooks.
Suspense.
Countdown for blastoff. X minus one.
Richard Diamond, Private Detective.
The Johnson Wax Program with Fibber McGee and Molly.
Kraft presents The Great Gildersleeve.
Yeah.
Well, it's 6 minutes after 11 p.m., Lisa, on a Sunday. This is show 48 of the WGN Radio Theater, January 31st, last day in January. We'll be here for the last hour of January, right?
Yes.
And then 2 hours.
I can't think of any place that would be better to be but WGN for the last hour.
That's right. The WGN Radio Theater is on the air. They should say that on Bozo Circus. The Bozo Circus is on the air. Remember?
Of course I
do. We're a bunch of bozos over here, so this is perfect. This evening and into tomorrow morning, we'll have The Great Gildersleeve, Inner Sanctum Mysteries, and Dragnet. A great lineup. So stay with us. We're here Saturdays and Sunday nights, 11 p.m. till 2 a.m. with the best in classic radio. And it's all brought to you in part by our sponsor, Cat's Pride.
It's time for Celebrity Scoop, brought to you by Cat's Pride. Meow.
This actress produced, co-wrote, and stars in the upcoming comedy The Boss as Michelle Darnell, who was sent to prison after being convicted of insider trading.
Okay, here's a little hint. You want to win two tickets to the auto show, right?
Oh,
that's
what
this is for.
That would be a great prize.
So if you can tell us who this celebrity is on Celebrity Scoop, you're going to win two tickets to the auto show.
The Chicago Auto Show.
That's right. The number to call, 312-981-7200. And we have a hint for you. This actress starred as CIA analyst Susan Cooper in the 2015 comedy Spy.
Why are you being so nice to me? Can't just be because I remind you of some sad Bulgarian clown.
We just said bozo. There she is talking about the clown. All right, call us if you know who that actress is. The number is 312-981-7200. We'll find our winner after this short break.
This is the one and only WGN Radio Theater. We are playing Celebrity Scoop. Let's hear that movie clip one more time.
Why are you being so nice to me? Can't just be because I remind you of some sad Bulgarian clown.
And let's talk to Clinton from Elgin. Hey, Clinton.
Hi.
Hi, we're glad you called in. Can you tell me who that celebrity is?
You betcha. That's Melissa McCarthy.
You are absolutely correct, and you are a lucky winner tonight, Clinton, because you've won two tickets to the Chicago Auto Show. It's running February 13th through the 21st at McCormick Place, courtesy of Fifth Third Bank. And have you ever been to it before?
Yeah, it's been about 5 years, so this is good.
Great. Well, I hope you enjoy it this year.
Oh, thank you very much.
Thanks, Glenn.
Thank you for calling.
Appreciate it. In a few minutes, we're going to tune in to the first portion of The Great Gildersleeve from 1942. But prior to that, it is time to give away another year's supply of Cat's Pride kitty litter, courtesy of Cat's Pride and our sponsor. And the CEO of Cat's Pride is here, Dan Jaffe. What's up, Dan? How are you?
Hi, Carl. Hi, Lisa. Thanks for having me back here.
Oh, I feel like absolutely. We've been talking about this all month, and finally, this is the night.
We're going to give away another year's supply. We're going to pick a winner in just a moment. Also, we have Dave Weiske with us. He's the Vice President of Customer Success at Cat's Pride and also Oil Dry. Oil Dry is the parent company. What's
Hi,
up,
guys.
Dave?
Doing well.
Yeah?
Good to see you. Happy New Year.
And you know what? We're going to give out, so write this down, folks. Get a pen and paper. We're going to give out Dave's email because we want you to bombard him a little bit, right? We want him to know what you think about Cat's Pride kitty litter and also have any questions about it, have any suggestions about it. What else, Lisa?
Well, it's just a way to communicate with Cat's Pride, and they know that this is such a great product. They stand behind the product. They might be able to give you some helpful tips, some suggestions, some ideas. This is a way that you can utilize the product to its fullest extent.
Right. So we're going to give out Dave's email in a moment, so please write that down, contact Dave. But right now, why don't we pick a winner, right, Dan?
I would love to. That would be great. And you know what's neat is we're getting feedback from prior winners of how much they appreciate winning a year's supply of cat litter. So it really makes it nice. So thank you not only for sending in your submissions, but for also sending in your thanks after the fact. So thank you guys.
And just in case you're tuning in for the first time and you're not sure what we're doing here, we have a drawing every month. Dan Jaffe, the CEO of Cat's Pride, comes in to WGN here live on the air, and we pick a winner that gets a year's supply of Cat's Pride kitty litter. And all we ask you to do is send a picture of you and your cat, along with you and your cat's name, your city and state. Just send it to us at catspridephoto@gmail.com. And that's all you have to do to enter. And we have hundreds of entries every month, and one lucky winner wins. We're going to do that right now.
Drum roll, please.
Here we go. The bag is opening up. Stick your hand on down there. Pick a name.
Okay, here we go.
Our lucky winner is Marie Opfergelt. Is that correct? Did I say it correct? I'm not sure. Opfergelt.
All right, Marie Opfergelt.
O-P-F-E-R-G-E-L-T.
And what town is she? Does it say there?
She is from Sarasota, Florida.
Oh, Sarasota, Florida.
And her cat is Trouble, which is...
Oh, Trouble with a capital T, right?
My dog was Trouble growing up. She was a miniature schnauzer.
You know what? Carl's still Trouble.
So Marie Opfergelt from Sarasota, Florida, and her cat Trouble will be winning a year's supply of Cat's Pride cat litter.
All right, now tell our listeners why Cat's Pride is the kitty litter that they should use instead of any other brand.
I could take up your whole show. We only have 3 hours.
We have a couple of minutes
to
talk
about. I'll hit the high points.
All right.
I mean, this is all we do. We mine and process this product in the United States, so it's all homegrown, and we control everything from the mine all the way to the shelf. So we are really the only company that's vertically integrated like that. So we are very passionate about the quality of our product. We make sure we know everything that goes in every bag and every jug. And if you're buying a scoopable, we make sure it clumps hard and it's low dust and it doesn't track and it controls odors. That's always the most important. If you're buying a course, the traditional one in the bags, we make sure it's highly absorbent and also controls odors. And so now we've come up with an added feature and benefit where we also make it up to 50% lighter so that you're carrying home less weight. We've known forever that consumers use cat litter by volume. They don't weigh in 5 pounds. I would love to hear your listeners tell me they put their tray on a scale and weigh in 5 or 10 pounds. Nobody does that. They all fill to 2.5 or 3 inches or whatever depth they like. And so they're using it by volume. So if they can get that fill and have it weigh less, that's less weight they have to carry home from the store. But guess what? The added benefit is to the carbon footprint because it's less weight that has to be shipped to the distribution centers and to the stores. So by buying a product that's 50% lighter, you're actually helping to reduce the carbon footprint by almost 50%. It's not quite 50%, but it's a significant reduction in the carbon footprint.
And can you tell us why the product is still just as good, if not better, even though it's 50% lighter?
Well, the beauty of it is air doesn't weigh anything, and it's the porosity in a clay that makes it absorbent, that makes it control odors. So the lighter our product is, what it means is it has more pores. If you densify it, if you smushed it down, it could weigh more in a tiny space, and it wouldn't absorb nearly as much. Well, Mother Nature made our clay naturally porous and naturally absorbent. So it absorbs over 100% of its weight,
What's the name of that product?
Yeah. So that is Cat's Pride Fresh and Light.
Right.
Ultimate Care.
Got it.
And yeah, that's a 2.0. And I guess as a teaser for the audience, we will be launching 3.0, just like Apple always launches 6.0. And, you know, and that's what they do. Our 3.0 is starting to actually ship right now. Some of your listeners may actually see it on the shelves. It's Cat's Pride Fresh and Light Ultimate Care. The weight on it will be 10 pounds. So it's even lighter. The existing 2.0 was 12 pounds. It was 40% lighter. This one now is 10 pounds.
Wow.
It's a full 50%.
Where do
lighter.
We find this product?
It will be nationally. It will be
but
everywhere.
But like what stores do we find your whole line of products?
So Walmart, Jewel, Meijer, Publix. I mean, Sarasota, Florida, Publix. we supply over 50% of the cat litter at Publix, which is a big supplier down in Sarasota. Albertson, Safeway. I mean,
Kroger.
Kroger's a huge customer. Great point. And they own Ralph's and a bunch of other banners.
Wow. So it's everywhere. And Dave, let's talk about your job there as a VP of customer success and what you're going to be doing now, making sure that the customer is happy every step of the way with the product.
Well, you know, my history comes back from, 30 years working with this great company, and my DNA was cut out of the distribution channel. So I was involved with the distribution of our products, actually the manufacturing. I was involved in the production planning all the way through the supply chain and be able to, be involved in all those touch points of distribution. So it's been an exciting journey. And as I have transformed from the vice president of logistics, now I'm in this new role, really, representing the customer. And this is about the touch points of our distribution channels and all the way down to the consumer. So it's really exciting. It's a new challenge. I would say for the future of Cat's Pride and Ultimate Care, this is huge. And as Dan mentioned, 50% lighter. I was involved in all that distribution before. So you think about, let's say, 10,000 truckloads being cut down to 5,000.
Wow.
It's significant.
And giving the customer the same, if not a better, product. So
absolutely.
It's amazing. It's fantastic. All right, let's give Dave's email out for everyone listening. Please write this down. If you have any questions about Cat's Pride and any of their products, you want to contact Dave.
Yeah, and you know what we'll do for you? We will post this email on our Facebook page. So if you didn't have a chance to write it down, because nobody has a pen anymore, we will post it for you on our Facebook page. You can check us out at Facebook, WGN Radio Theater, and send an email to Dave that way.
All right, so Dave's email is Dave Weiske. So, D Weiske. I already messed it up. D Weiske, and it's DWEISKE. At oildry.com.
Yeah, or just go to Facebook page and we'll post it for
you. But once again, D Weiske, DWEISKE at oildry. And it's that spelled OILDRI.com.
As in iris, yes.
All right, very good. Well, guys, thank you for coming down and being on the show as always. And it's always a pleasure having you.
Thank you.
Carol, Lisa, thank you. And a quick shout out to my parents. Today is their 60th wedding anniversary.
Oh, my gosh.
They are down in Florida staying warm. And so, Mom and Dad, congratulations on 60 years.
Yeah. Oh, the Jaffies. All right, way to go, you guys. All right, it's time for the Great Gildersleeve. Let's do this right now. This is going back to November 29th, 1942. Hal Perry in part one of the Great Gildersleeve.
Kraft presents the Great Gildersleeve. Cheese Company, who also bring you Bing Crosby every Thursday night, present each week at this time, Harold Perry as the Great Gildersleeve, written by John Wheaton. Well, Summerfield is aflutter. Showbills have appeared around town announcing a revival of The Student Prince, starring Vera Lavalle of the original company. When the box office opened this morning, the first in line was our friend, the Great Gildersleeve. And we find him now at home, stretched out on the couch, gazing into the fire and warming himself in the memory of days gone by, while through his head run the immortal melodies of Sigmund Romberg.
I have a dream of you, fashioned of a starlight, perfume of... she was lovely. She was lovely. Vera Lavalle.
Mr. Five, 5 feet tall and his fluffy white.
Oh, that song.
Imagine a mop for head to toe.
Leroy.
When I go from side to side.
Good idea.
I'm sorry, Uncle. Didn't know you were here.
I told you I don't like that song. I don't like a song that makes fun of anyone's physical peculiarities.
Oh. Well, gee, Uncle, you don't have to take it personally.
I don't see any other way to take it. It's certainly not music. Mr. 5x5.
5 feet tall is 5 feet wide. He don't matter.
Bertie,
yes.
Must you sing that song?
Well, you were singing, Mr. Gildersleeve.
Let me make my position clear to everyone. I do not like Mr. 5x5. I don't want to hear it. You must sing it. Sing it when I'm not around.
Yes, sir. Can I even play the record?
No.
After I bought it with my own money? It's Freddie Swack's band.
Freddie Slack. I don't care if it's Koosevitzky's. I don't like it.
But why not, huh?
Because it's, well, it's ungrammatical, for one thing. He don't measure no more. What kind of talk is that?
That's jive talk.
Jive talk? Well, I'm not going to have this place turned into a juke joint, and that's final. Let's have no more discussion of it. Bertie, when's dinner going
to
be ready?
Oh, my goodness. That's what I came in to tell you.
What?
It's ready. Leroy, run upstairs and tell your sister, will you?
Oh, it's dinner!
Oh, don't stand down here and whistle. Go up and tell her.
Okay. Mr. Five.
What's the use? I'll be right in, Bertie. By the way, what are we having tonight?
Well, we're having turkey.
But we had turkey last night. We've had turkey croquettes, we've had turkey hash, we've had cold turkey and warmed over turkey.
Well, that's turkey for you.
Leroy, give me that.
Marjorie's got a new fella.
What?
Leroy, you give me that. Hey,
Marjorie's got a new fella.
Leroy, make him give it to me.
Leroy.
Look what Dopey keeps stuck in our mirror.
Give it here.
No, now give it to me. It's mine.
Just a minute, my dear. Don't snatch.
Well, I don't see why he has to come snooping around my bedroom.
Uncle Mort told me to. Yeah.
I told you nothing of the kind. I told you to go up and tell her dinner was ready. And it is. Come on, we'll settle this at the dinner table.
Well, Leroy has no business taking things that don't belong to him.
You're quite right, my dear. Leroy, give it back to her, whatever it is. What is it, anyway?
Nothing. It's just an old picture out of a magazine.
It's Alan Ladd. She thinks he's murdered.
Leroy, I'd like to break your neck.
And who, may I ask, is Alan Ladd?
Oh, you know him. He played in that movie with Veronica Lake.
Who's Veronica Lake?
Are you kidding?
You know Alan Ladd. He plays gangsters. He talks with his mouth shut.
Come one step closer, bud, and you're dead.
That is not like Alan Ladd.
Well, you're no Veronica Lake.
Leroy, eat your soup. I don't know what this generation is coming to anyway. Movies, gangsters, juke joints, Mr. 5x5.
Yeah.
You. In my day, we had good, wholesome, artistic entertainment, and we enjoyed it.
Such as what, Uncle Mort? The Merry Widow?
Oh, you kid!
No, no, not the Merry Widow. I'm not quite as old and dilapidated as you might think.
Well, what? I'd like to know what you thought was hot stuff when you were young.
Marjorie, I don't recall that we ever referred to it as hot stuff. But as long as I live, I'll never forget a performance I saw of the Student Prince.
Oh, brother.
Oh, for goodness sake, it's playing here right now. It opens tomorrow.
I know that, my dear. And with the same star I saw in it, Vera LaValle. She was a gorgeous thing. Golden curls and blue eyes and dimples and a smile. Well, I saw it four times.
Why, Uncle Mort, I never thought of you as a stage door, Johnny.
You may think you're joking, my dear. But as a matter of fact, I did wait outside the stage door for her one afternoon. I stood 3 hours in the snow just waiting for a glimpse of her.
What happened?
Nothing. They weren't giving a matinee that day.
Oh, I think that's sad.
Oh, but that didn't stop me. I went back to the stage door again that night.
Did she come out?
No, she came out the front door. But I saw her and I ran after her. And that was when she spoke to me.
What did she say?
Well, I remember she was getting into a cab, and I saw a glove lying at her feet. And I picked it up and gave it to her.
And what did she say?
She said it wasn't hers. Oh, but she was wonderful. I remember a song she sang. Deep in my heart, dear, I have a dream of you. Fashion of starlight, perfume of rose. Oh, and she sang that. The whole audience rose to his feet as one man.
I walked out.
Young man, have you ever seen The Student Prince?
No.
And I'll thank you to reserve criticism until you have.
Excuse me, is everything all right?
Oh, yes, Bertie, I'll ring when we finish the soup.
Yes, ma'am, I thought I heard Mr. Gildersleeve hollering.
What?
Mr. Gildersleeve was not hollering.
The idea.
I don't know, I've been hearing things lately. Must be the gremlins or something.
Yes. You may take up my plate now, Bertie. I don't care for any soup.
Don't you? You ate it all.
Did I? Oh, well, take it away anyway. I'm not very hungry this evening.
Oh, I didn't mean to make you mad, Uncle.
I'm not mad, Leroy. I'm just distressed at what seems to be a serious lack in your education, that's all. You'd spend less time listening to Mr. 5x5. By George, tomorrow night I'm going to take you and Marjorie to hear The Student Prince.
Oh, gosh, Uncle, I'm afraid I can't make it.
What do you mean you can't make it? I'm offering to take you to the theater, young man. Live actors on a real stage. Something that hasn't been seen in Summerfield in 10 years. You understand?
Yeah, I know, but, Unc.
But what?
Well, Toots Malarkey is breaking in a new band out at the Avalon Ballroom tomorrow night.
Toots Malarkey, forsooth.
But he's got a trombone player that's supposed to be out of this world. And he's got Mary Moffat singing the vocals.
You too, my dear. Well, all right, you can have your Toots Malarkey and your Mary Muffin. I know somebody who can appreciate good music when she hears it. And I'm going over there right now.
Mr. Gildersleeve, your dinner. You coming back?
I haven't the slightest idea.
Yep. It's the Gremlins.
And that's the first portion of The Great Gildersleeve, November 29th, 1942, Attending the Theater, starring Hal Perry. And you know what, Lisa? This was radio's first spinoff. You know how there's spinoff television shows? Well, Fibber McGee and Molly was the show that that the Gildersleeve character spun off of into its own show. Gildersleeve was a character that would pay a visit to Fibber McGee. It was so popular that NBC said, "Hey, let's give you like what you're going to probably do someday.
And do my own
leave
show
me in the dust. She's going to leave me in the dust here. Let's take a quick break. Then it's more here on the WGN Radio Theater." Welcome back to the show, WGN Radio Theater, every Saturday and Sunday, 11 p.m. until 2 a.m. And we are in the midst of listening to The Great Gildersleeve. Right, Lisa Wolf?
Yes, Carla.
Would you like to listen to the conclusion now?
I really would.
Hal Perry as Throckmorton P. Gildersleeve, November 29th, 1942, Attending the Theater. Here's the conclusion to The Great Gildersleeve.
I'd love to go to the play with you, I really would, but just about an hour ago, Judge Hooker called up.
And... Oh, Hooker.
Yes, and he asked me to go with him.
Well, Leela, of course, the judge is tone deaf, but if you don't mind that.
Oh, I'd ever so much rather go with you, Throckmorton, because I know your real love of music and all, but I can't very well turn the judge down now, can I?
No, I suppose not. I just hope he won't spoil it for you, that's all.
How do you mean, spoil it?
Well, as soon as he gets in the theater, he usually goes to sleep.
Oh.
Yeah, and when he sleeps, he snores.
Oh, dear.
And when he snores, oh, brother.
Oh, dear, I do hope he won't be conspicuous.
Conspicuous? Oh, they'll probably throw him out before he gets too bad. They usually do. Well, I hope you enjoy it, Leela.
Oh, don't go, Throckmorton.
Yes, I've got to go. I've got to get down to the hotel and pay my respects to Kitty. She'll be expecting me.
Kitty?
Vera Laval, the actress. Her friends call her Kitty.
Oh, you know her?
Oh, yes, yes. We met some years ago.
Did you know her well?
Yeah.
Why, Throckmorton, you never told me about that.
What was there to tell? It was the old story. She had her career, so eventually she went her way and I went mine. She was a lovely creature, though. And now, after all these years, we meet again. Life is funny, isn't it?
Yes. Yes, it is. Yeah.
I remember the night I first met her. It was in front of the theater, the Tivoli. She was waiting for a car, and she dropped her glove. I still have it.
Oh, Throckmorton, you're so romantic. Ooh. You know, people used to tell me I ought to go on the stage.
They did?
Yes. You know, I'd love to meet your friend. I'll tell you what. I'm giving a little chafing dish supper here after the theater tomorrow night. Why don't you come and bring Miss whatever her name is?
Oh, I'm afraid I couldn't do that. Kitty's the shy type, and you know how actresses hate publicity or anything like that.
Oh, do they?
Yes. And anyway, with Hooker here, well, you know, he's a little uncouth. He wouldn't know how to behave with an actress.
Well, try to come anyway, will you?
I will if I can, Leela. Got to go now.
Well, goodbye. What is it, Throckmorton? Have you forgotten something?
Egad, she was lovely. Goodbye, Leela.
Goodbye, Throckmorton.
Hey, good morning, Floyd.
Oh, come in, Judge, come in. It may be a little while, Judge. I'm giving Mr. Gildersleeve the works here. A little massage.
What are you doing, Gildy? Have your face lifted?
No, I'm... Oh, get that stuff out of my mouth, Floyd.
Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't know you were going to open it.
You think I could keep it closed with that old goat sounding off around here?
Take the other chair there, Judge. Got some new magazines, Life, Pick, Radio Mirror. Got a new Esquire. I've seen it. Well, you don't lose any time. It only came in yesterday.
Come on, you book lovers. Let's get on with this, Floyd. I've got things to do.
Yeah, make him pretty, Floyd. He's got a big romance on tonight.
Who told you?
Oh, a little bird.
Yeah, a little bird named Leela Ransom.
I guess it sort of cut you out there, didn't it, Gildy? I guess you were a little slow on the trigger.
Cut me out? Nothing. I've got other plans.
Yeah, I heard all about that. Floyd, you may not believe it, but our friend Gildersleeve here was quite a Romeo in his younger days.
Oh, now, Hooker.
He was just like that with Vera Lavelle.
You mean the actress?
If you could call her that.
Now, listen here, Hooker. Vera Lavelle could have gone into the Metropolitan Opera.
Now, why didn't she?
She was too pretty. The prima donna was jealous.
Who told you that? Vera Lavelle?
Well, maybe she did and maybe she didn't.
Oh, Gildersleeve, who do you think you're fooling? You may be able to fool Leela Ransom with those stories, but not me. You don't know Vera Lavelle any more than I do.
Oh, no? Prove it.
I don't have to prove it, but I'll bet you can't even get the woman's autograph.
All right. I'll bet you a new hat.
What do you want with a new hat? You never had any trouble talking through the old one. I got him that time, didn't I, Floyd?
Yeah, that was a good one, Judge.
Yes, all right, Hooker. Just for that, I'll fix you. I'll see you at Leela Ransom tonight, and I'll already turn up tonight with Vera Lavelle's autograph. I'll turn up with Vera Lavelle. I'll fix you. Ooh, who am I fixing?
Now let's get back to the great Gildersleeve, whom we find preparing himself for an evening of high adventure. He's bathed and shaved, and now, with his dress trousers dragging and his suspenders drooping, he burrows through his bedroom closet looking for his patent leather shoes.
I wish Bertie wouldn't keep straightening out this closet. I saw those shoes only last week. Bertie! Oh, here they are.
What is it, Mr. Gildersleeve?
Nothing. Look at the dust on the darn things. Inside them, too. A miniature storm. You'd think Bertie would get into that closet once in a while. I'd better speak to her.
Uncle Mort!
Yes, Marjorie?
Will you please make Leroy get out of the tub?
Make him what?
Get out of the tub! Get out of the tub!
I'm not in the tub!
I'm talking about Leroy!
Oh, Leroy, whatever you're doing, stop it! Well, Bertie put all the studs in my shirt. That's just like finding money. Let's see. Front collar button. There you are. Back collar button. Oh, well, I'll use the wooden one from the laundry. Come to think of it, that's what I had to use the last time. Who's that?
It's me, Mr. Gildersleeve.
Oh, yes, Bertie?
I got your white tie, and I'll put it right here on the doorknob.
Thank you, Bertie. Oh, that looks fine.
Uncle Mort!
Yes, Leroy?
Marjorie won't let me use her comb.
Why don't you use your own?
It's busted.
That's ridiculous. What do you mean it's busted?
No teeth.
No teeth. Well, let him use it this once, Marjorie, and stop this bickering, and we'll never get to the theater. I wonder who thought of a white tie to go with a tail coat. Look like a penguin. This vest doesn't come down very far. Guess I'll have to button the top button of the pants after all. Now, the coat. By George Gildersleeve, you're a fine figure of a man. Wait till Leela sees you in that. You'll make Hooker wish he'd never been born. Hooker with his 1929 tuxedo. hello, Peavy.
Oh, hello, Mr. Gildersleeve. All dressed up, I see.
Never mind that, Peavy. Give me a half a dozen panatellas. I'm in a hurry. The children are waiting outside.
Panatellas? Why, you usually take the...
Yeah, I know. Perfectos. But I need them to fit my case here.
Ooh, cigar case, too. You must be going down to the opera house.
That's right. I'm stepping out later, too, with the star of the show.
Well, now, that's real friendly of you, Mr. Gildersleeve. I suppose he is a stranger in town.
Peavy, I'm stepping out with Miss Vera Lavelle.
Ooh, stepping out.
Yes, Miss Lavelle and I were rather close friends some years ago.
I guess those actresses like to flirt, don't they?
Where did you ever hear that?
Did you ever take her to one of those intimate little suppers?
I'm not talking, Peavy.
Mr. Gildersleeve, did you ever drink out of her slipper?
Yes.
That chapter of my life is a closed book, Peavy.
I see.
But I may open it up for just one little peek.
Well, in that case, have you thought of taking her a box of candy, Mr. Gildersleeve? A nice selection of chocolates often makes a favorable impression on a woman.
I'm saying it with flowers, Peavy. You see this corsage?
Ooh, very nice. Such a refined odor. Of course, Mrs. Peavy is very partial to geraniums.
Yes.
You don't give an actress geraniums, Peavy. Actresses need special handling. Actresses are entirely different from ordinary women.
Well, no, I wouldn't say that.
Don't you fool yourself, Peavy. With an actress, you never know where you are. An actress can look you right in the eye and lie like a trooper. She can laugh one minute and cry the next. She can run through the whole gamut of human emotions in no time. And for no reason.
Yes, so can Mrs. Peavy.
Give me those panatellas.
Oh, yes, here you are. Oh, Mr. Gildersleeve, I couldn't interest you in a new perfume for men. It's called Heather.
No, perfume is for people who have something to conceal, and I haven't. Have I, Peavy?
Well, not really, Mr. Gildersleeve. Nothing to be ashamed of, but mothballs do have a characteristic aroma.
It'll wear off. Good night, Peavy.
Good night, Mr. Gildersleeve.
Do you call this an opera house?
No remarks, young man.
Looks like a Roman ruin.
This was a very fine theater in its day.
It's a dump alongside the Majestic.
Quiet, you. You're going to see this whether you like it or not, so stop beefing.
Okay. Hey, Unc, can we buy some candy?
Where are we going to buy candy?
They were selling it out in the lobby.
We just got settled, Leroy. Why didn't you ask for it then? No, you can't have any candy.
We didn't get any programs, Uncle Mark.
Oh, so we didn't. Usher?
Psst.
Miss? Well, I'll get her when she comes back. Oh, there's Dr. Pettibone and Mrs. Pettibone. Hello, hello.
Boy, not so loud. People are looking at you.
Yeah?
Hey, Unc.
No, Leroy, you may not. What is it?
When does the show start?
8:30.
Do they give us a newsreel or do we just get this student prince thing?
Suppose you just wait and see.
Hey, look. Look who's coming down the aisle.
Who?
His Honor, the old girl.
And Mrs. Ransom's with him.
Say, they're coming in here. They must be sitting in these seats right ahead of us.
Yeah, Hooker fixed that. He did it deliberately.
Oh, how could he, Uncle Moore?
I don't know, but it's no coincidence. He did it to burn me up. Oh, good evening, Leela. Hello, Horace.
Well, isn't this nice? We're all practically sitting together.
Yes, quite a coincidence, isn't it?
Hello, Marjorie.
Hello.
Leroy.
Hi.
Didn't know you were bringing the brood, Gildy.
I'm leaving him after the show.
My, you're looking so distinguished this evening, Throckmorton.
Oh, thank you. You're looking, well, yourself.
Hey, Gildy, have you got a pocket full of mothballs or you've been sleeping in a cedar closet?
Excuse me, Judge. Miss, would you mind stopping the usher there, please, madam? Thank you. Where's that card now? Miss, will you kindly take this calling card back upstage and give it to Miss LaValle with my compliments? Yeah, Vera LaValle, the star of the show.
Moore, not so loud. Everyone in the theater can hear you.
Yes, miss. She'll be thrilled when she learns I'm out front tonight. I sent her some flowers, of course, earlier. Her favorite kind. I just wrote on the card from an old admirer. But she'll know.
Louder, Gildy. They can't hear you up in the balcony.
Oh, Throckmorton.
Yes, Leela?
I do hope you'll be coming to my house after the show and bring your friend.
Yes, don't forget the friend.
Well, she's not too tired, Leela. We'd love to.
Hey, there go the lights.
Oh, isn't this exciting, kids? This is what I love about the theater. When the lights go down and the curtain's just about to go up, there's nothing like it.
The orchestra's coming in now. See their heads?
Yeah, like a row of pool balls. Can you imagine any of those guys playing with Toots Malarkey?
You wait, Leroy. You're going to love this. It's got some of the most wonderful music. There's one scene in particular where Kathy comes in, that's Vera LaValle, and they sing, "Deep in my heart, dear."
Oh, Lord, please. What will people think?
Forgive me, my dear. I always forget myself when I hear that song. You see, we used to think of that as our song.
Oh, for goodness sake. Usher, will you ask them to stop that racket back there?
Uncle Moore, the usher, she's signaling to you.
She can't do anything to me. I'm not disturbing anybody.
No, no, she's got a card for you. Look, she's passing it in.
A card? Oh, a card. It must be from Vera. Or Kitty, as we call her. It must be from her. Thank you, miss. My goodness, it is from her. She wants me to come back to her dressing room.
Hey, where are you going, Unc?
Backstage. I'll probably see the show from the wings. You and Marjorie stay here and enjoy it, understand?
Oh,
I want you to enjoy it. Hey, let me out of there. I mean, pardon me, will you, madam? Oh, oh my corn.
Have you got the chafing dish going, Judge?
Yeah, it doesn't blow up again.
Well, I've got the cheese and everything. Oh, I suppose I might as well start it.
Leela, I owe you an apology.
Hmm?
I've seen some bad performances in my time, but that one tonight, wow.
Oh, I can't agree with you, Judge. I quite enjoyed it, and I thought Vera LaValle took her part real well. Of course, I could have sworn she was wall-eyed, but maybe it was just where I was sitting.
I'll tell you one thing, she'll never see 50 again.
Well, you can hardly blame the poor creature for that. But those costumes, I mean, really, do you suppose she made them herself? Oh, I wonder if that could be her now.
If it isn't, Gildersleeve owes me a hat. I'll go, Leela. Well, come in, Gildy, come in.
Miss LaValle, may I present Judge Horace Hooker?
Oh, how do you do?
This is a pleasure, Miss LaValle.
Judge Hooker is our local constable, so to speak.
Oh, always glad to meet a judge socially.
And our hostess, Mrs. Ransom, Miss LaValle.
I'm just so thrilled you could come, Miss LaValle.
But, darling, you were such a darling to invite me. I smell something cooking.
Welsh rabbit. Judge Hook and I were just saying, Miss LaValle, how much we enjoyed your performance.
Oh, did you, darling? Thanks so much. Oh, I'm afraid I wasn't really in voice tonight. I was nervous for some reason.
Oh, yes, I can imagine. It must be quite exciting, you and Throckmorton meeting again after all these years.
Leela.
And you knowing each other so terribly well and all.
How's that again, darling?
I said it must be...
Excuse me, Leela. Vera, I'm going to hold you to that promise you made.
What promise was that?
You know you were going to sing.
Oh, you've been after me all evening to sing, as if I hadn't sung enough already.
But you said you would.
Oh, but not right now. Not before the Welsh rabbit.
Yes, right now, this very minute. Please, Vera.
Oh, he's cute, isn't he? Oh, how can I resist him? Means so much to you, I'll
see. Oh, good.
Bravo, bravo.
Thank goodness.
What did I sing?
Sing something romantic. Sing the song that brought you two together.
Brought who together? Well, what shall it be?
Well, after all, Vera, there's only one song where you're concerned. Deep in my... That's it.
No, if you don't mind, I think I'd rather sing a new song.
Oh, a new song? What's that?
One that will always remind me of you.
Oh, that's wonderful. All right, you sing it.
Mr. Fine, my boy!
Aren't you?
Well, it's almost 12, my dear.
Did you have a good time at Mrs. Ransom's?
Yes.
I love the student prince.
Yes. Marjorie, would you mind not singing that?
But I thought you liked it.
As far as I'm concerned, I wish the student prince had never gone to college. Wish he'd gone to reform school. Good night, my dear. Good night, everybody. Yeah.
original music heard on this program was composed and conducted by Billy Mills. This is Frank Bingman speaking for the Kraft Cheese Company and inviting you to tune in again next week for the further adventures of the Great Gildersleeve. This program has reached you from Hollywood. This is the National Broadcasting Company.
All righty, there you have it. The Great Gildersleeve, going back to November 29th, 1942, attending the theater starring Hal Perry as Throckmorton P. Gildersleeve. And you know what, Lisa? In the cast is the wonderful Shirley Mitchell as Leela. And I interviewed Shirley Mitchell years ago. I have to play that interview. She was just awesome to talk with. And also in the cast, Walter Tetley. Walter Tetley did a ton of radio voices for cartoons, and he was it Sherman to Mr. Peabody? Remember that?
Of course,
he was Sherman.
I do.
So I hope you enjoyed The Great Gildersleeve here on the WGN Radio Theater. Let's take a short break, then it's much more. We are all hungry here, so we did a little cheeseburger, cheeseburger, cheeseburger. Everybody except for Dan. Dan's, you know, he works out, so he doesn't want any carbs. But Lisa had some carbs, Mike had some carbs, and Carl had some carbs from cheeseburger, cheeseburger, cheeseburger.
Yeah, but no cheeseburger here.
I had a cheeseburger.
I know you did.
And
no cheeseburger.
Yeah, and it was very good. Chips, no fries over there at Cheeseburger, Cheeseburger.
Anybody right. who works at the Billy Goat will be able to tell you that I am not afraid of taking in any carbs.
Some carbs. What did you have, Mike? Triple decker?
No, I had the same thing you did, double cheeseburger.
Double cheeseburger. It was very tasty, I'll tell you that. And, yeah. Oh. Uh-oh.
Oh, no.
We forgot to ask Roger if he wanted something. Next time, Roger.
That's all right. I'll make do with my braided honey wheat pretzels
there
up here.
There you go. Okay. Got it. All right. So we learned our lesson. We don't want Roger mad at us.
No. I'm not mad. No, are you kidding? I already had my sandwich.
Okay.
My sandwich.
Oh, there you go. All right. Well, you know what? In this hour, Roger, you're going to like it. We have Inner Sanctum Mysteries.
Ooh.
I know you like the mysteries.
Yes, I do.
And in our third hour this morning, it's Dragnet. And Jack Webb, of course, Sergeant Joe Friday. It's February 1st. Welcome February.
Happy February, everybody.
Yeah. We're going to do something really fun for Valentine's Day around here on the WGN Radio Theater. Jack Benny was born on Valentine's Day, and we are going to play six radio shows over the weekend, the Valentine's Day weekend, that have Jack Benny in them, including a suspense episode. He plays in a suspense episode, and we have him on Burns and Allen, and, of course, the Jack Benny program, and some other great stuff. So you don't want to miss that.
And Roger's going to bring us chocolates.
Yeah, yes, he is.
Oh, you better believe it.
Yes.
I'll bring you the box that had the chocolates in it, but I'll bring them.
And only the best.
Only the best.
Oh, that's funny. Well, Inner Sanctum is coming your way in just a few minutes, but first it's time for Celebrity Scoop.
It's time for Celebrity Scoop. Brought to you by Cat's Pride. Meow.
This actress stars in the upcoming drama thriller Money Monster as a TV producer who must find a way to stay alive while uncovering the truth behind a web of money lies.
Okay, now Celebrity Scoop brought to you by Cat's Pride. We have this segment at the beginning of every hour, and it gives you a chance to win some fun prizes. And the prizes for this Celebrity Scoop are
a pair of tickets to the Chicago Auto Show running right now, February 13th through the 21st.
Okay, very cool. All right, so here's a hint. Call us 312-981-7200 if you know the answer. This actress is heard here along with Richard Gere in a 1990s comedy romance called Pretty Woman.
I only got through 11th grade. How far did you go in school?
I went all the way.
All right. There you go. Give us a call, 312-981-7200, if you know who that actress is. We'll find our winner after this short break.
Now we'll get back to Celebrity right. Scoop, and we're going to play that movie clip just one more time.
I only got through 11th grade. How far did you go in school?
I went all the way.
And we have Carol on the line from Elmwood Park. Hi, Carol.
Hi.
We're so glad you got through. Can you tell me who that actress is?
Julia Roberts.
It is Julia Roberts, and you are a winner. She's going to be in an upcoming movie called Money Monster, and you have won two tickets to the Chicago Auto Show running February 13th through the 21st at McCormick Place. Have you been there before?
Yes, I have.
Well, I hope you enjoy it again this year. It's courtesy of Fifth Third Bank, and they are the exclusive bank of the show. So I hope that you enjoy that.
Thank you so much.
Sounds like a lot of fun.
Thank you. Thanks for listening, Carol. We appreciate you tuning in to the WGN Radio Theater. And if this is the first time you've tuned into the show and you heard a classic radio show, well, we do this every Saturday and Sunday night here on the legendary Radio 720 WGN. We broadcast these radio shows across the nation because the signal hits about 40 to 45 states at night and also parts of Canada. So we have listeners all over the country, and I know because they send in their pictures of their kitty cats from all across the country for our Cats Pride contest, which is great. In fact, the winner just a little while ago when Dan Jaffe was here and he picked a winner was from Florida, right?
Yep, Sarasota, Florida.
There you go. All right. So make sure you do send in your photo of your cat and your name and address and your name and state, city. Right?
You're confused.
You know what? You why don't you do it, Lisa?
No. You know, we just got our January winner. You can now submit for February. Send us a picture. If you've already submitted, you can do it again. A picture of you and your cat with your name, your cat's name, your city and state. Send it to catspridephoto@gmail.com. We get all of them. Mike will post them on our Facebook. Even if he doesn't post it, we promise you are entered into the drawing. And Dan Jaffe will come again the end of February and pick another winner.
Yeah. Very good. You do that very well, Lisa. Because, you know, I'm a lot older than you. I'm like almost a whole year older than you. So
yeah, but it's all in the mind.
Yes,
you fell once
my
on
mind
black
is,
ice.
I know. Yeah, it really happened. I fell on black ice, and I've never been the same since. I hit my head hard, let me tell you.
I just have to get him going.
All right, so it's time for Inner Sanctum, which in my opinion was the best like horror show. Like the best mystery show was Suspense. But I think the best horror show was Inner Sanctum. And I think Lights Out right there, probably close to it. But Inner Sanctum was cool because it had this creepy host, Raymond, and it was played by Raymond Edward Johnson. Later, the host was played by Paul McGrath. It started in 1941. It was the brainchild of Hyman Brown, who also brought us the CBS Radio Mystery Theater in the 1970s that so many people remember. It had a creaking door trademark. The door just creaked open to start the show. You know, good evening. Yeah, it was very cool. And this had some big stars on it. Boris Karloff, Peter Lorre. And then it had, as a supporting cast, the best New York actors. This was broadcast out of New York, like Mason Adams and Mercedes McCambridge, Santos Ortega. It was sponsored for a long time by Lipton Tea. And I think you're going to just love this. Pull the covers up close and enjoy Voice on the Wire from November 29th, 1944. You will hear Raymond Edward Johnson as Raymond, our host, heard on CBS. Here's part one now of Inner Sanctum Mysteries.
Colgate Tooth Powder presents
Inner Sanctum Mysteries.
Good evening, friends of the Inner Sanctum. This is your host, Raymond, inviting you in through the squeaking door. Well, it's so nice if you've come here tonight and helped me sit up with a corpse. Hey, such dull company, so cold and stiff, bored with being dead. All the life seems to have gone out of him. What? You say you've seen him before? Oh, no, he's not that horror man who plays in pictures. But he does look like him. So much so, in fact, you might even call him a dead ringer. Tonight's Inner Sanctum Mystery, Voice on the Wire, is an original radio drama by Robert Sloan and stars Miss Leslie Woods in the role of Geraldine Reeves. It's produced under the direction of Hyman Brown. No doubt the telephone is an ingenious invention, but as far as I know, no one as yet has been able to commit murder over it. Although many people have wanted to. Still, there are worse things you can get on the phone than the wrong number. Especially if you happen to call the voice on the wire. On a long, narrow island, just off the shore of one of our larger lakes, Mrs. Geraldine Reeves, widow of the late composer David Reeves, lives alone in a gaunt, gray, shingled house. Only a few hundred yards away are the charred remains of her former home, where David was burned to death in a fire just 2 years ago. It's after dinner now, and as the clock in the hall strikes 8.
You've got to get hold of yourself, Geraldine.
I can't help it, Doctor. You see, it starts every night, about this time.
What starts?
The music. David's last composition. I hear it being played on a piano. And the notes seem to come from the old house, the house where David died in the fire.
Well, perhaps someone is playing that piece on the piano. Someone on the island.
No. No, there's only one other house out here, and those people are away. And the dog. The dog keeps howling all night long.
What dog?
I don't know. There's no dog on the island, but David and I did have a dog. You remember? He stayed with David the night of the fire. He died with him because David was too ill to get out of bed. There. There it is again.
That's amazing. That's a real dog. Somewhere on this island.
Oh. Do you think so?
Why, of course. Probably some stray got across the bridge or swam over from the shore.
Well, you see, Oh, excuse me, Doctor.
Certainly.
Hello?
Hello. Mrs. Geraldine Reeves.
Yes, speaking. Who is this?
Listen.
Good heavens!
You have 4 hours to live, Mrs. Reeves. 4 hours to live.
What? What did you say? Hello! Hello!
What's the matter, Geraldine?
The music. The same music. I heard it again.
What?
Over the phone. Someone's playing it on the piano.
It must be some sort of a prank.
No, no, no. A man spoke to me. He said I have 4 hours to live.
4 hours to... Here. Let me have that phone.
No, no, it's no use. He's rung off.
Well, we might be able to trace the call. Hello, operator. Operator.
Somebody's trying to kill me.
Hello, operator. Operator.
What's wrong, Doctor?
I'm afraid the wires have been cut. We'd better get into my car and drive into town right away.
Yes. Yes, it isn't safe for me to stay here another minute.
Can't understand it. The motor won't turn over. Somebody must have meddled with this car while we were in the house.
Well, try my car, Doctor.
I think perhaps I'd better. Is it in the garage?
Yes, yes, I'll... Great heavens, it's gone. The garage is empty. The car's been stolen.
Now, let's not lose our heads, Geraldine. But... We're not completely cut off yet. We can't use a car. We can still walk.
But it's almost a mile to the bridge, and the road is so dark down along the water.
It won't be too dark with a flashlight. We can go down through the woods to the edge of the water and walk along the shore.
Oh, wait a minute.
What's the matter?
I just remembered. David's brother's driving out here tonight.
Harvey?
Yes, and his wife, Laura. They said they'd be here by 8:30, and if we wait for them, they can take us back in their car. What do you think, Doctor?
That's safer than trying to make it alone. If we wait right here, perhaps we can watch the bridge and see them coming. Heaven's sake, Geraldine. What are you staring at?
The bridge, Doctor. The bridge, look. This end of it's been washed out. Doctor, this is crazy, searching for a telephone wire in back of the house. If we're seen out here, there's no telling what might happen.
Please, please, Geraldine. We've got to find out where that wire was cut and splice it together again. It's our only chance of reaching the police.
But it's almost 9 o'clock. We've wasted an hour already. If I'm not out of here by 12...
Stop it, Geraldine. Stop it.
sorry. I didn't mean to. What's that?
It's the dog again. That confounded dog is tied up around here somewhere.
No, I didn't mean that. I meant the light on the road. There's a strange light on the road.
The headlight of a car. Coming this way.
A car?
Yes. Quick. Behind the house and stay out of sight. It's turning into the driveway.
How could a car have come out onto the island with that bridge up?
Shh. They're getting out.
Oh, why, it's Harvey and Laura.
Good heavens.
Oh, Harvey.
Hello.
Harvey. Oh, Harvey.
Pete's sake. Jerry, what are you doing? Playing hide-and-seek with us back there?
Oh, Harvey, I'm so glad you came.
Jerry, what's the matter?
Oh, everything. But first you've got to tell us how you got here.
Why, we just drove over the bridge and on up the road the way we always do.
But how could you drive over the bridge? It's been washed out.
What?
Well, I saw it with my own eyes, and Dr. Prising saw it too, didn't you, Doctor?
I certainly did.
Oh, you must be mistaken. We drove over the bridge not more than 2 minutes ago.
Are you sure you haven't been on the island longer than that?
Well, I'm positive. Why?
Well, some very strange things have been happening here tonight. Geraldine's life was threatened, her car stolen, and mine tampered with.
What?
What are you talking about?
Look, I'll show you. The starter in my car won't even turn the motor over. Here. By George. It's working now.
Say, what is this, Jerry? You and the docs have been taking a few pills? Or did you drink too much wine at dinner?
Oh, no. Everything he said is true. Even the telephone wires have been... I must be going out of my mind. That is my telephone ringing, isn't it?
Yes, of course. Well, aren't you going to answer it?
I'm almost afraid to. Come with me, Harvey, will you, while I do?
Sure.
Hello?
Hello. Mrs. Reeves?
Yes?
Listen. It's 9 o'clock, Mrs. Reeves. You have 3 hours to live.
I guess that's the voice on the wire, that guy right there.
That's pretty eerie.
See how that tied that in? The name of the show is Voice on a Wire, and then there's that guy telling her she has 3 hours to live.
There you go.
That's how that works out. Inner Sanctum Mysteries, November 29th, 1944. As I say, one of the best of the creepy mystery shows, and we have a lot of them. There's a lot of them in existence. We play them here on the WGN Radio Theater. They're a fan favorite. People like it.
Yeah, we do tend toward the creepy stuff.
Yeah,
so,
well,
you know. I don't know. There might be a reason for that.
We're both a little creepy.
We're a little off.
That's why, yeah.
I'll say off.
Yeah. I just love these classic radio shows.
Don't you wish we could be laying in, not we could be laying in bed, but that you not were laying together. In a bed and you I was laying in a bed.
You in your bed with your husband.
I'm
20 cities away from you.
You are an hour and 15 minutes away from my house.
Really? Yeah, Lisa came over to my house the other day.
And it took me an hour and 15 minutes.
You and your husband.
Yes.
And
you and your husband.
You and your husband came over. And we played some ping pong and some darts.
Yes.
And we ate.
We ate a lot of food. A
lot of food.
And we had fun. And then I drove an hour and 15 minutes to get home.
Oh, my gosh. I'm sorry. Mike came too. Mike and Denise came over and played some pong. You guys are pretty good at ping pong.
Yeah. Thanks.
Pretty good.
Thanks.
You guys are pretty good.
We're going to sneer over
Dan. Dan missed it, but Dan, are you a ping pong player yourself?
Yeah, I will play from time to time.
Okay.
It's been a while, but
next time.
For big bucks.
Yeah, next time. I'm going to run the table.
Bring your $100 bills with you.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, let's take a quick break. Then it's more here on the WGN Radio Theater.
Nestled along the shores of the Fox River in the heart of downtown Algonquin is Riverside Plaza, an apartment complex and haven for those who appreciate modern, classic lifestyle. The views are spectacular, the finishes are of the highest standard, and the endless amenities include the event room, fitness center, and indoor heated garage. To schedule a tour and explore Riverside Plaza, Call John at 224-268-6343. That's 224-268-6343. Or visit RiversideLux.com. That's L-U-X-E.com. Riverside Plaza, where luxury and beauty come to life.
All righty. Yes, indeed. This is the WGN Radio Theater. My whole team is here. Mike Estella is my executive producer. Lisa Wolf is my Tonto. She is my Kato.
Your everything.
She is my...
everything.
She's my Jingles. Jingles is from, I think it was... Jingles was... Who was he? Was he Roy Rod? No, not Roy Rogers.
I don't know Jingles.
I think it was... what was it? Wild Bill Hickok. Wild Bill Hickok.
That one I don't know.
Sidekick was Jingles. Let me think. What else?
Didn't Johnny Carson
did
used
we say
to
Kato?
Have a second banana? Didn't
yeah.
he used to have a second
his
banana?
His second banana was
Ed McMahon.
Ed McMahon.
Right.
Yeah, you're my Ed McMahon.
I'm
right?
a little better looking, but... Okay.
You are definitely better. 100% you're better looking than Ed McMahon.
Okay, you know.
Right. Let's see. Well, you know what I'm saying.
Just everything
and then
the board.
Dan Long, the best in the business, in the booth there, the producer... And what's going on, Dan? How are you?
I'm doing all right.
Yeah?
Always good to be on the clock.
Yes, you are. And you know what? Dan works very hard. He stays after the show. I mean, not only does he work hard throughout the show, but then he puts together the podcast. I don't know how he does it. He's here till all hours of the night putting the podcast together.
I think he sleeps in the booth.
Does
he?
He's
got a little
I don't
cot
think
in
so.
The corner.
Dan's not the type. Dan is very conscientious.
No, I mean he's always there.
He's not sleeping on the job.
I didn't mean on the clock.
Yeah, and he puts the podcast together. So, folks, if you miss any of the show, you can always go and listen to our podcast.
And how do you do that, Carl?
I don't know. I just search.
Go to WGN Radio.
Yeah.
.com.
WGNRadio.com.
Yeah. And you could just
go to find WGN Radio Theater.
Yeah.
And it's
or
a link.
Or if you're on a mobile device, you can just hit our Facebook page and then hit the use app button, and that will actually take you to
really?
WGN
or you could
Radio.
Download the app itself, the WGN Radio
or
app, just as well,
too.
Which is what I do.
You know what I do?
Carl's confused.
I just go.
You have. A
what?
Team of people to do everything for
You're
you.
You're so funny.
We hit the buttons for
this
you.
This is what I do. I go to Google, okay? I Google, and then I just type in WGN Radio Theater and then the number of the show. Like, this is number 48.
Yes, I'm aware of that.
So I write in WGN Radio Theater 48.
And it works.
And it pops up.
Fair enough.
I click that. And then I hit the little start button or
and
whatever it is.
You're good to go.
And there we are, Lisa.
See?
Voila.
Yes. Who needs all
you
that
know?
Other
junk? It's
like
junk. Abracadabra, and it's there.
Alakazam.
Yeah. And, you know, and I listen to the show when I'm driving in the car. And when I have the kids in the car, my son or my daughters, they're always like, Dad, you are so corny.
You know what your son said to me?
What?
When we were at your house?
What?
He said that you should be nicer to me
on
the air.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Right. Definitely.
That's what he
said. I agree with him. You should be nicer to me on the air.
He said, 100%. He said, you shouldn't take that from my dad.
Right, yeah.
And I said, what?
Yeah, he knows I'm kidding you.
I know.
I'm ribbing you.
I know.
All right, let's get back to this. Inner Sanctum Mysteries, Voice on the Wire, November 29th, 1944. Leslie Woods as star, along with Raymond Edward Johnson as our host. The conclusion now to Inner Sanctum Mysteries.
I can't stand this waiting, this endless waiting. Why don't the police come?
Easy now, Jerry. They'll be here. You only phoned them a few minutes ago.
Something can happen before they get here.
I have a gun ready, just in case anything should happen. And I won't hesitate to use it.
You have a gun, Doctor?
Why, yes. Geraldine gave it to me before you arrived.
Oh.
What's the matter? You trust me with a gun, don't you?
Why, of course.
Laura, what is it?
A face at the window. I just saw a face at the window.
Laura, please, you're letting your imagination run away with you.
No, I saw it right there. It was the face of a dead man.
Quick, Harvey, out the back way.
Right.
No, no, please don't leave us.
We'll be right outside the window.
Jerry, I'm afraid.
Well, there's nothing we can do, Laura. They won't be far away.
But I don't trust Dr. Prizing. You never should have given him that gun.
Why not?
Because I think he's a murderer.
Laura!
Yes. Don't you remember how he acted at the trial? When you were accused of starting the fire that killed David?
But
he testified against you time and again. Subtly. To make them think you did it. Because he started that fire himself.
What on earth are you saying?
I'm telling you the truth. During the trial, he swore that he wasn't on the island the night of the fire. But he was. And I can prove it.
How?
By this cigarette case of his. Here, look at it. You see how it's charred and melted on the side where his initials were? He must have left it in the fire that night, by mistake.
But he couldn't have. The police searched everything the next morning. They would have found it in the ashes.
Not if it wasn't there. He came back for it that same night, soon as he missed it, and dragged it out of the fire. He knew it would incriminate him if it were found in his possession, so he threw it into the lake as he drove home over the bridge. And that's where we found it, in the water, the last time we were out here.
Oh, Laura, I hope you're wrong.
So do I. But if I'm right, we're all in for...
Laura! The lights! Somebody's cut off the lights!
Laura! Laura, where are you?
Carry the door! Carry through the door! It's the face I saw!
Laura! Laura!
Meant to be me, Harvey. Whoever came through that door intended to kill me.
Jerry, please. How is Laura, Doctor?
I'm afraid I can't do anything for her, Harvey. She's passed on.
Oh! Laura. Laura, darling.
You'd better not touch the body, Harvey.
Oh, leave me alone. You've done enough already, Dr. Prizing.
I beg your pardon?
You'll have a lot of explaining to do when the police arrive, Doctor. I'll tell them how you ran away from me out there before the lights went out. How you were here in this room when they went on again.
Harvey, don't say things you'll regret later on.
Just a moment. Where is the cigarette case Laura had in her hand when the lights went out?
What cigarette case?
You know the one I mean, Dr. Prizing. The gold one that was charred in the fire.
I haven't the faintest idea what you're talking about.
I have. And if you're as innocent as you claim to be, you won't mind being searched.
Not at all. Go right ahead.
I will.
Whom are you calling, Geraldine?
The police. I can't understand why they haven't arrived yet. It's almost 10 o'clock.
Maybe something's happened to them on the way. Maybe their car broke down.
Their car, too?
Huh?
Nothing. Only it seems as if your car is the only one that works when you want it to.
Headquarters.
Oh, Sergeant. Sergeant, I can't understand why your men aren't here yet. A murder's been committed.
Do you think you've been calling the police department all this time, Mrs. Reeves?
David's music.
It's 10 o'clock, Mrs. Reeves. You have 2 more hours.
Jerry, are you in your room?
Yes, Harvey. What is it?
This is our chance, Jerry. We've got to run away from Dr. Prizing now, while we're alone.
Yes, of course, Harvey, but how will we go?
In my car. It's just... Wait a minute. Listen.
What is it?
It sounds like footsteps in the living room. Prizing must be in there.
No, I saw him go outside. He said he wanted to see if he could find the dog.
Well, there's someone in there. I'm going to find out who it is.
Be careful, Harvey. He may be standing just outside the door.
Yeah. All right. You stay behind me.
Is anybody there? Is anybody in the living room?
No. There doesn't seem to
be. Don't look at me, Harvey.
Well, Dr. Pricey, you've been standing at this door with your ear to the keyhole?
No, not exactly.
I thought you were supposed to be outside, looking for that dog.
I was outside. For a while. But I saw someone moving around in here, so I came back. When I got here, your wife's body was gone.
What?
Gone? Laura's body is gone?
I assume that it's gone. It's not where it was on the floor.
But how could it... Look here, Pricey. You were alone in this room.
And so were you. After I left. Wasn't it, Geraldine?
Well... Yes, now that I think back, he was.
Certainly. What's more, Geraldine saw me leave the house. And when I left, the body was still here. After that, I don't know what happened.
What are you driving at?
Draw your own conclusions. I've drawn mine.
Why, you...
Harvey, stop it! Stop it!
I'm sorry, Jerry. I just...
The dog again.
Yeah. I can't understand why you didn't find that dog, Dr. Prizing. He must be right out there where the old house used to be.
But if you think you can find him, why don't you go? Good heavens, man.
What?
Look. There's a fire burning out there.
On the grounds of the old house.
Prizing, you started that fire yourself, and you're burning Laura's body in it to cover up your crime.
Harvey, where are you going?
I'm going to the fire, Jerry. I've got to stop it. I've got to put it out.
I'm going to lose my mind if someone doesn't stop these awful things from happening. Won't anybody help us?
Easy, Geraldine. The man who hopes to kill you was trying to break you down first. It's part of his plan. Here. Take a sip of this brandy. It'll help you.
All right, thank you, Doctor.
What's the matter?
Oh, nothing, really. I just don't care for any brandy just now.
What's wrong with it?
Well, I didn't say anything was wrong with it. I just don't...
You fool. You think I'm trying to poison you?
I don't know what to think.
Here. Give me that brandy. I'll drink it myself. There. Leave me now?
I don't believe anyone.
Listen to me, Geraldine. I'm the best friend you have in the world right now. You've got to understand that, because there isn't much more time. We've got to get away from Harvey while he's still out there.
What do you mean?
Can't you see? He's trying to kill you.
That's a lie.
It isn't, Geraldine. Harvey's the one that's lied to us. He and Laura both. They intended to kill you when the lights went out. But in the darkness, Harvey made a fatal mistake. He thought it was you he was strangling, not Laura.
I won't believe
that. It's the truth. They never drove across that bridge at 9 o'clock tonight. They've been here on the island all evening.
How do you know?
Because we saw that bridge with our own eyes. And I saw it again just 5 minutes ago. It's still down.
You're lying.
Come out and see it for yourself.
You're just trying to get me out of this house.
Stop being such a fool. Here. Take this gun. If it'll give you any security, take it. And hold it in my back while we're out there. But for heaven's sakes, let's get away from Harvey while there's still a chance.
All right. Give me the gun.
Here.
Now you keep in front of me all the time. And I'm warning you. If you make one false move, I'll kill you in cold blood.
You see, Harvey and Laura were lying to us. The bridge is still down.
You're right. They couldn't have come across that bridge.
Of course not. The only trouble is, we can't get back over it now either.
We've got to get away, Doctor, now, before we're seen.
What about that house at the other end of the island?
People are away.
But they might have a boat.
Yes, of course they do have a boat. We can row to the mainland. Come on, quick.
All right.
I have a feeling we're being followed.
It's your imagination. Hurry, Geraldine. Hurry.
We are being followed, Doctor. Look behind us. There's a man with a dog.
Just like the dog you owned. The one that died in the fire.
Yes. And the man... It's Dave.
We've lost them. Lost them in the woods.
They can't be far behind.
It doesn't matter now. The house is just ahead.
But the boat, Doctor. The boat's not at the landing.
It must be.
Well, it isn't. Can't you see it isn't?
Perhaps it's around and back.
No, that side of the house faces the road.
And we'll have to break in and hide here until morning. Our best chance is to be inside, where we can protect ourselves. After all, you still have a gun.
But I hardly know how to use it.
Then give it to me.
No.
You still don't trust me, do you?
I don't know, Doctor. But I'm the one who's been threatened, so I really should have the gun.
Very well. Wait here. I'll break through the window and come around on the inside.
Did you hurt yourself?
No. I'm all right. Just wait there for me and I'll unlock the door.
Oh, hurry, Doctor. Please, hurry. They're on our trail again.
Come inside, Geraldine. Quickly. And lock the door behind you.
What's wrong, Doctor?
Nothing's wrong. We're in luck. There's a phone here. If it hasn't been disconnected... Hello. Hello, operator.
This isn't the operator. Tell Mrs. Reeves it's 11 o'clock. She has one more hour to live.
Past 11.
I won't leave this house. I'm not going to run away any longer. If they're going to kill me, let them come here and do it. Only, for heaven's sakes, why don't they do it right away? Why don't they come here and get it over with instead of waiting until 12 o'clock?
Geraldine, please.
Well, I can't stand it any longer. I'd rather die than go through any more of this torture. I just can't.
Sit down for a moment. Relax. And try to ease your mind.
Oh, for... Dr. Prizing, what are you doing?
Playing the piano. I thought it might relax you.
But that melody... You! You're the one I hear at night playing David's music. Playing it right here in this house.
Yes, Geraldine. I've rented this house to protect you from David and the dog.
Well, stop it! Stop playing that piece! Stop it!
You didn't know that David would come back to life. Did you, Geraldine?
Now stay where you are. Stay...
Don't be afraid. I won't harm you as long as you have that gun. But the gun won't stop David.
David's dead.
Is he? Listen. He's right outside the door. And in a moment, he'll be here to take you with him.
No!
David! David!
Yes, Geraldine. I've come back to see you. In spite of everything you've done.
Stop!
You killed me, didn't you, darling? You started that fire because you knew I was too much of an invalid to get out of bed.
Stay where you are!
You hated me, Geraldine.
Stop!
No. Your bullets can't harm me now. Nothing you can do can harm me. Because I'm dead and you're still alive.
David. David, forgive me. I didn't know what I was doing that night. Please, please believe me. I was sorry as soon as I started that fire, but it was too late then. I couldn't put it out. I couldn't.
How dare you ask my forgiveness when you're still lying?
But I'm not lying. I'm not. I told you everything.
Why didn't you tell the police?
Because I wanted to live.
You'll confess everything now?
Yes, David. Yes, yes, I will. If you'll only leave me alone, please. Please. It was my cigarette case Laura found in the water. I'd thrown it over the bridge that same night after I took it out of the fire.
Well, I guess that's all we need, Harvey. A full confession with two witnesses.
Harvey!
Yes, Geraldine. I do look like my brother in this dim light. And the dog Laura's holding outside is the same breed as the one you own.
Laura! Laura! Did you say Laura was alive?
Very much so, Geraldine. It wasn't hard for me to pretend being dead. The doctor keeping you away from my body.
Then you were all in this together. You forced this confession out of me.
Yes, Geraldine. The blank cartridges Dr. Prizing slipped into that gun of yours really turned the trick. Oh, excuse me. Hello. Oh, hello, Inspector. Yes, it's all right now. You can hook the wires up again. She's told us the truth. And you'd better get to work on that bridge right away. It's still down.
What an outrage. All those opportunities for murder and not a drop of blood spilled all night long. Oh, well, some days you can't lay away a corpuscle. Well, it's time for me to join the moonbeams now. But before I leave under a cloud, before I'm missed, I thought I might pass on the moral of tonight's story. If you must light a fire under your husband's bed, be careful where you drop the ashes. By the way, this month's Inner Sanctum mystery novel is Puzzle for Puppets by Patrick Quentin.
Well, now it's really time to close that there squeaking door until next week when Colgate Tooth Powder brings you another Inner Sanctum mystery. So until then, good night. Pleasant dreams. Remember, another Inner Sanctum mystery next Wednesday night. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
Inner Sanctum Mysteries, one of the best of the scary radio shows, Lisa. That's Voice on the Wire, November 29th, 1944, with Leslie Woods, as heard on CBS. Hope you enjoyed that creepy, creepy show.
And the famous creaking door.
Absolutely. Let's take a break. Then it's more here on the WGN Radio Theater. This is a world record, Mike. Lisa is up.
She is.
This is how many weeks in a row that Lisa is not sleeping in the third hour of our show.
Two weeks in a row.
Yeah, because three or four weeks ago she was out cold, snoring like a...
Carl is a kidder, is he not?
I'm not kidding.
Are you kidding?
She dozes off. She narcolepsies out. Yeah, she has a little narcolepsy.
I couldn't fall asleep at WGN if you paid me.
Yeah.
Now you, on the other hand...
Hear her like snore. Sometimes she goes in the green room and I have to go, come on, Lisa, it's time. We're almost on.
Yeah, you go on without me. I'm just going to take a little nap.
You need to have that uvula
snipped. Oh, no, here he calls it the uvula. You just pronounce that body
part
correctly.
You've heard her, right? You've heard her in there snoring away, haven't you? Yeah.
Dan, have you?
Dan's playing Switzerland.
Dan,
he doesn't want
have
to
you
say.
Heard that?
Not from here in the booth, no.
No, not from the booth. Dan's not my friend.
All right, in this hour, we're going to be here till 2 o'clock in the morning, and we have a terrific episode of Dragnet coming your way. Jack Webb in a terrific episode from 1952. You won't want to miss that. We're going to start things off, though, with our sponsor segment, Celebrity Scoop.
Celebrity Scoop, brought to you by Cat's Pride. Meow.
This actor stars as the voice of Baloo in the upcoming live animation adventure of The Jungle Book, a remake of the 1967 film.
All right, if you want to win two tickets to Chicago's Auto Show, you will want to guess who this celebrity is. The number to call, 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. Here's a hint. He starred as Phil in 1993's Groundhog Day.
Rita, if you only had one day to live, what would you do with it?
All right. If you know who that celebrity is, call us, 312-981-7200. You'll win two tickets to the Chicago Auto Show. Call us right now. We'll find our winner after this break.
We are playing Celebrity Scoop. Let's hear that movie clip one more time.
Rita, if you only had one day to live, what would you do with it?
We have Steve on the line from Galesburg. Hey, Steve.
Yeah, that would be Bill Murray.
That would be Bill Murray. And that particular clip was from Groundhog Day, which is on Tuesday, right?
Yeah.
So what's our prediction? Is Punxsutawney Phil, is he going to see?
Hey, pretty good, Lisa.
Is he going to see a shadow on Tuesday?
What do you think, Steve?
The calendar says 6 more weeks of winter.
Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
I believe that.
Yeah, that's all right.
I'm going to go with Steve. He sounds like he knows what he's talking
about.
Yes,
he does.
Steve, you are a winner. You have won two tickets to the Chicago Auto Show running February 13th through the 21st at McCormick Place, courtesy of Fifth Third Bank, and they are the exclusive bank of the show. I hope you enjoy that. That sounds really cool.
Well, thanks a lot.
Thank you, Steve.
Thanks for listening to the show. It's time for Dragnet. This was a terrific police procedural. Came to radio, Lisa, in 1949. Lasted to 1957 on the radio, 9 seasons. It was true crime stories of closed cases from the LAPD. Jack Webb starred as Sergeant Joe Friday. Each case was detailed from start to finish, and Friday narrated the action. There was tons of sound effects in these shows. He loved the sound effects, the realistic sound effects. There were 5 sound effects experts on these shows, and other radio programs usually only had 2. And you know what? You know how Everyone thinks he said, just the facts, ma'am.
Right.
Never uttered by Jack Webb. Never said it on any radio or TV show. I don't know where it came from, but he said things close to that, but he never said, just the facts, ma'am.
What did he say? What
I don't know.
Catchphrase?
I don't know. I don't know. Let's listen to the show. We'll
okay,
find out. Radio supporting players were in the show, like Frank Lovejoy, Paul Frees, Parley Bear, William Conrad, Peggy Weber. And there were some movies on Dragnet, and it ran 16 seasons on television. So
yes.
Big, big show. And this is a radio broadcast from August 28th, 1952. It's called The Big Test, and it stars Jack Webb. Here is Dragnet.
Ladies and gentlemen, the story you are about to hear is true. The names have been changed to protect the innocent. You're a detective sergeant. You're assigned a homicide detail. A young man walks into your office and tells you that his best friend has been killed by unknown assailants. Your job? Investigate. Dragnet, the documented drama of an actual crime. For the next 30 minutes, in cooperation with the Los Angeles Police Department, you will travel step by step on the side of the law through an actual case transcribed from official police files. From beginning to end, from crime to punishment, Dragnet is the story of your police force in action.
It was Monday, August 9th. It was warm in Los Angeles. We were working the day watch out of homicide detail. My partner's Frank Smith. The boss is Captain Warman. My name's Friday. It was 7:58 a.m. when I got to room 42. Homicide. That you, Frank?
Yeah, morning, Joe.
Looks like it's going to be a scorcher today, doesn't it?
Yeah, nice and clear.
How'd the weekend go?
Lousy.
Why? What do you mean?
Oh, Faye and me had a ruckus Saturday night.
Was that so?
Yeah, it happens every time we have somebody over for dinner. Never fails.
Yeah.
And she gets a yakking it up with the company. We never eat till 10, 10:30. It's a miserable time for dinner.
Yeah, it's pretty late at that.
Saturday night, we had the Johnsons over, going to play a little cards, have a little dinner. You know, relax.
Mm-hmm.
Wife fixed Swedish meatballs. They're on the stove. Everything's dandy. She gets to talking. We finally sit down to eat. It's 10:15. Meatballs are burned.
Yeah.
Well, that time, we're all so hungry, we lost our appetite. It was real embarrassing, Joe. We finally sat down. I figured I'd let Faye know I was pretty sore. But I didn't want to come right out and tell her in front of the Johnsons, you know.
Yeah, I can understand.
So I picked up one of the meatballs that was burned. Said she'd invented something new. Everybody else used chlorophyll for their teeth, but we had built-in charcoal.
Yeah, what'd she say?
Nothing. She just looked. Hasn't said a word to me since. Sends the kids with messages for me. It's pretty miserable.
She'll probably be over it when you get home tonight.
Pardon me.
Yes, sir?
Is the homicide department where you report a murder?
Yes, sir, that's right.
You the fellas I talked to about a murder?
Yes, sir. Come on in. Sit down. Take that chair over there.
Thought I'd never make it.
Are you all right?
Yeah, now that I'm here, it's all right.
Your face pretty badly cut there. Those bruises, scratches on your throat. You sure you're all right now?
Yeah, I'm all right. I never thought I'd get here. At times I was ready to quit, but then I'd think of Kevin, what they did to him, and I had to keep walking. I had to. For Kevin, I had to.
Well, everything's all right now. You can tell us about it.
I don't know where to start.
What's your name, young fella?
Bruce Hamilton.
All right, Bruce. I'm Joe Friday. This is my partner, Frank Smith.
Hello, Bruce.
Hello.
Well, we know that you must have been through a terrible ordeal, but you can tell us about it. It's all right.
What day is today?
It's Monday, the 9th.
Monday. Then it was Saturday night. Just 2 days. Seems like 10 years. We just finished dinner, sitting around the fire having coffee, trying to figure out whose turn it was to do the dishes. Then we heard them.
You heard them? Who's that?
Horsemen. Lots of them. They rode right into the camp. One of them yelled something, and they all stopped. Stood there looking at us. We didn't know what to do, who they were. We just stood there. Then this big guy, I guess he was the leader, said something to us in Spanish. We couldn't understand him.
All right, go ahead.
You see, Kevin and I go to school together. Summer vacation, we decided to go down to Mexico and do a little prospecting. That's the reason we were there.
Mm-hmm. Go on.
We just stood there and looked at him. Big guy said something else, and then they all laughed. And he got off his horse and came over to Kevin and me. He was a big man. When we tried to tell him that we didn't know what he was saying, he laughed and turned to the other men, and they laughed too. Big guy said something else to him, and they all got off their horses and started to go through our things. Kevin told him not to and started to walk over to him to stop him. The leader hit Kevin and knocked him down. The men laughed at him, and Kevin got up and ran toward one of them. Kevin started to hit him. I broke away from the one that was holding me and ran to help Kevin. The big guy grabbed me and hit me in the face, knocked me down, started to kick me. I heard a shot. When I looked where Kevin was, he was all doubled up, holding his stomach. He hollered at me to help him. Then the guy shot him again. He fell down, didn't move. They all laughed, thought it was a big joke. I got up. One of them shot at me. I started running. I ran as fast as I could. He kept shooting. Thought sure they'd hit me, and I kind of waited for it. Then I ran through some bushes, and I fell into this gully.
Mm-hmm.
When I hit the bottom, I just lay there and didn't move, almost afraid to breathe. Guess they thought they'd kill me.
I see. What happened then?
I waited until I couldn't hear them anymore, and then I crawled up out of the gully to see if they were gone. I wanted to help Kevin. I didn't see anybody, so I walked over to where he was. He was laying on his face. You got no idea how I felt when I turned him over.
Mm-hmm. All right, we understand. Go ahead.
I knew right away he was dead. It shot him in the stomach and in the chest. Shirt was all stained. There was nothing I could do for him. Nothing anybody could do. I looked at him for a long time. I guess I cried. It was terrible. Kevin was dead and there's nothing I could do for him.
I see. What'd you do then?
I buried Kevin. I looked for something to dig the grave with, but they'd taken everything, even the shovels, everything. I found a place under a tree and dug a grave with my hands. Then I went back and got Kevin. Laid him in the grave I dug and covered him up. Said a prayer for him. I did the best I could for him. Best I could.
All right, son, try to take it easy. Frank, let's get him some water. I'll take him down to the interrogation room, all right?
All right.
Bruce, maybe you'd like to go down the hall to another room. It's a little more quiet down there, huh?
Yeah. Sorry. Crying like a kid. I guess you think it's silly, but I can't help it.
It's all right, Bruce. We know how you feel. Nobody gets too old to cry. Go ahead. No, it's down this way.
Okay. So tired. I'm glad to get this over with.
Sure. All right, here we are. Go ahead, Bruce. Want to sit down?
Thanks.
Here's your glass of water, Bruce.
Thanks. Tastes good. Helps.
All right. Now, is there any more you want to tell us?
Well, there's a little more. There was nothing I could do. I looked around. They'd taken everything. Dishes, food, supplies, clothes. I went over to the mesquite bushes where we hid in our duffel bag. We kept all our money and papers in there. Wallets, identification, all our valuables. But they'd found that. It was gone. They hadn't left anything.
Well, they took everything. Didn't leave a thing, huh?
Not a thing.
What'd you do then?
Started to walk. We parked our car just off the highway. It was about 5 miles. When I got to where we'd park it, the car was gone. I didn't know what to do. What could I do?
All right.
I started to walk to Ensenada to tell the police. Then I began to think that the bandits had taken my wallet. I didn't have any identification, no way to prove who I was. Couldn't even speak the language. Got scared that they might not believe me.
Now, you walked all the way from Ensenada to the American border, is that it?
That's right. I walked all Saturday night, and Sunday morning I found an old adobe house, and I crawled through a window and slept. I don't know how long I was asleep, but it was dark when I woke up. I started to walk again. I walked all Sunday night, too. When I got to the border, I was afraid to go through the gate, so I went down by the riverbed and found a hole in the fence. I crawled through and went over the American side. When I got there, I felt better. Safe. I figured that I'd go up to the first policeman I saw and tell him what happened.
Did you notify the authorities down in San Diego?
No, I got to the police station, but I didn't go in. I didn't tell them.
Why not?
Like I said, I didn't have anywhere to prove who I was. I had no money. My wallet was gone. My clothes were all torn. Face was all cut. I thought it'd be better if I could get to Kevin's mother. If I could see her and talk to her, she'd know what to do. I hitched a ride. I wanted to go to San Francisco. Truck driver brought me this far. While we were driving, I thought more and more about what I'd say to Kevin's mother, how I'd tell her he was dead. Then I knew I couldn't do it. But I had to tell somebody. That's why I came to see you.
Now, Bruce, we're going to have to go back down to Mexico. You'll be able to show us where the body is, won't you?
Well, if I have to go, I guess I can. But I can tell you exactly where it was. I can give you a map, tell you right where he's buried.
Do you want to give us that information now?
Yeah. It was south of Ensenada, 40 miles down the new paved highway.
South of Ensenada, 40 miles. You sure it was 40 miles?
Yeah. While we were driving, Kevin and I kept trying to figure out how many kilometers to a mile. I kept watching the speedometer. It was just 40 miles when we turned off the paved highway onto a little dirt road.
40 miles?
Yeah. There's a clump of trees near there in the gully. You can't miss it.
I see. Can you give us the description of the car, the license number?
Well, I don't remember the license number, but the car was a 51 Ford sedan, dark blue. The car belonged to Kevin. I never paid any attention to the license.
Mm-hmm. That's K-E-V-I-N, Kevin, huh?
Yeah.
Now we can check that through DMV. What was Kevin's full name and address?
Kevin Allen Bradley. He lived at 6502 Washington Street, San Francisco. He lived with his mother, apartment on Knob Hill.
Mm-hmm. Would you give us a description of Kevin?
Well, he's about my size, generally. 5'10", 140 pounds, blue eyes. His hair's light, kind of blonde like mine, 22 years old. We looked a lot alike. Kids at school used to think we were brothers sometimes.
I see. Joe, we better get a communication to the Mexican authorities, fill them in on the whole thing.
Yeah.
And we're coming down.
Yeah.
Contact San Francisco and let them handle that end of the thing.
Mm-hmm.
Get a teletype off the DMV in Sacramento, get a license number on the car. We better contact the San Diego PD and get a hold of Al Gate and fill him in on the thing.
Yeah, that's a good idea. I'll stay here with Bruce. You want to take care of that?
Uh-huh.
There is the Mike Estella signature door slam break right there.
Yep, I heard it. And I did not hear Just the Facts, man.
Yeah, no, he doesn't say Just the Facts. That is the first portion of Dragnet from August 28th, 1952, The Big Test, starring Jack Webb. This was heard on NBC. You know, when you listen to Dragnet, and I was listening pretty intently there to the show, it sounds different than any other radio show. It sounds very realistic. Yeah. It's very kind of understated. And I one time, and we've had her on the show a few times, Peggy Weber. Peggy Weber, terrific radio actress. She played Jack Webb's mother on these shows because she could impersonate like an older woman really well. She was actually much, much younger than Jack Webb. She was playing his mother on this show, and we interviewed her one time. And I remember her saying that what Jack Webb liked to do, he really wanted it to sound real. And what he liked to do is get all the actors around the microphone and have them stand far away from the microphones. And they turned the pots up way, way up. So the volume of the microphones way all the way up to 10. And if you were watching Spinal Tap, he would put it up to 11. But no, he would put it up to 10. And he'd have the actors all stand far away, like, you know, maybe 4 or 5 feet away from the microphone and do the lines. And so that made it sound like this. If you're listening to the show, it's definitely different than the other shows where the actors were right up by the microphones and performing their roles. You can hear the ambience in the room. You can hear every little pin drop in the room, and they did it very understated. So it's a unique sound on Dragnet. Hope you're enjoying this episode from 1952. You're listening to the WGN Radio Theater. I'm Carl Amari, your host, every Saturday and Sunday night from 11 p.m. until 2 o'clock in the morning. My co-host is Lisa Wolf. My executive producer is Mike Costella. And the man in the booth, our producer, is Dan Long. And we're here, as I say, every weekend playing the best in classic radio. Just hit us up on Facebook, whatever you want to hear. Just search us on Facebook at WGN Radio Theater. And please like us when you're there, right, Lisa? We like likes.
Oh, we do.
I actually love likes.
You love to be liked.
We love to be liked. Mm-hmm. Let's take a quick break and then we'll return. Oh, yeah, I like this song. Well, this don't tell me this is Tom Petty, right? Ah,
yep.
Got one. Hey.
Wow.
I threw the hook in the water. And as soon as it hit the water, a fish jumped out.
That was impressive.
Pulled it right out.
Carl.
It was a big, big walleye.
Walleye pike.
Not bad. Caught a fish. I like. Who is this guy? Tom Petty. Who is this guy again? Yeah, I like Tom Petty. He's great.
You peak.
He has a radio show, right, Dan? He has his own. Does he have a radio? He has a radio show out of. Doesn't
yeah,
he?
I think he does. Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't remember where he does it out of.
Syndicated radio
yeah,
show out of Los Angeles. I think he does it out of a. Out of the airport, like Los Angeles.
Yeah, it's
airport.
Like an airport hangar or
right?
something. Yeah, that's right.
He's great, and you know
he knows his music. If you listen to him talk, he can go.
He is so good. I love that show. We got to look it up, and we'll try to get Tom Petty on the show. I like Tom.
Yeah,
Petty.
Look into that.
Yeah, I like Tom
yeah, I was
Petty.
Say, can you work on that for us?
Hey, Tom, how would you like to be on our old time radio show? Yeah, what do you think?
Maybe he's listening.
Well, you know what we'll do. He'll come on our show, and then we'll go on his show.
Exactly.
Right?
That's
and we'll
idea.
Sing some of song. Let's sing some songs with him.
Mm.
Let's sing with Tom Petty.
Yeah.
That'd be fun.
Yeah, I'm
right?
sure he'd love to have you sing with him.
You know? And, right, he probably, maybe he'll hire me to be his backup, one of his
you
backup
would
singers.
Be an asset to any
Right, I
group.
Would be an asset, okay.
I said
That's
asset.
That's for sure. I would. I could sing some, in the shower. I could sing. It sounds pretty good in the shower.
I wouldn't know about that.
I'm going to bring an 8-track tape recorder in there with me, my 8-track tape recorder, and record myself, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And,
great.
And I'll play it on the air here. I'm going to do that. I'm going to torture you guys. I'm going to play it on the air next week.
You torture us with without your music. Don't be
it.
Ridiculous.
Exactly. Okay, let's. So I don't have to torture you anymore.
Okay.
Let's get back to Jack Webb in the big test on Dragnet.
Now look, young fella, would you know these bandits again if you saw them?
I might not know some of them, but the big guy and the one that shot Kevin, I'll never forget them. The big guy was tall, heavy, over 6 feet, well over 200 pounds. I'll never forget him. That laugh when they killed Kevin. When he laughed, you could see he had two gold teeth right here in front. These here.
Two gold teeth, huh?
Yeah.
Now, how about the other man, Bruce? Did you get a good look at him?
He was a small man, dark like the leader. He wasn't wearing a hat. Real thin face. His clothes were all dirty and his pants were torn around the bottoms. He was wearing those leather sandals, the open kind. His feet were filthy like he hadn't had a bath in a year.
You think you'd be able to identify any of the others?
Well, I don't know. Maybe if I saw him. I was scared, and I don't mind admitting it.
Joe?
Yeah, Frank. I stopped by R&I before I went on with the other communications. Checked the name Kevin Allen Bradley through.
Yeah.
There's a teletype from San Francisco dated July 13th. It's a missing person report on Kevin. You want to read it?
What's it say? Regular missing report?
Well, it's described as male, white, American, 22 years, 5'10", 140 pounds, blonde, blue eyes, fair complexion. The time of disappearance was wearing a dark blue gabardine suit. Driving a dark blue 1951 Ford, license number 1Robert2951. Something else, Joe?
Mm-hmm.
He was known to be carrying a sum of money in excess of $1,500 when he disappeared.
$1,500 is a lot of money, isn't it?
Not to Kevin. He was used to carrying that kind of money. You see, his folks were pretty rich. He always had all the money he wanted.
I see. Well, how about this missing report here, Bruce?
What do you mean?
Well, didn't Kevin's mother know that he was going to Mexico?
Well, no. You see, they'd had an argument about where he was going to spend his summer vacation. She wanted him to go to Canada, and he wanted to come down here. One afternoon, we just took off. Kevin went to the bank and got the money, and we just took off.
I see.
He didn't tell his mother anything about it?
No, he thought that she'd try to stop him. Probably would have, too, if she'd known.
Oh, was the money among the things that were stolen from you?
Well, yeah. It was in Kevin's wallet in the duffel bag.
Mm-hmm.
I suppose it was kind of foolish to leave that much money just laying around, but we did. We didn't think that anything had happened like this. When I stop and think back over it, Kevin being dead, I don't know, I just get sick.
Now, you say you didn't have any money. How did you get along?
I didn't think much about food. The important thing was to tell somebody about Kevin's being killed. That's all I thought about, telling somebody.
Yeah, sure. Well, you must be pretty hungry then. You'd like something to eat now, would you?
Yeah, it might taste pretty good. Sandwich and some coffee. How about you guys? You gonna eat?
Frank, how about you?
Yeah, after I get communications off, I'll run across the street and pick up some sandwiches and coffee and bring them back here.
All right, fine.
What kind of sandwich you like, Bruce?
Oh, anything. Doesn't make any difference.
Joe?
Oh, ham's all right. White bread, a lot of mustard. You know.
Okay, I'll be right back.
Right.
Oh, say, Joe, I'm running kind of low on my allowance. I only got a buck and a half. You got a little change?
Yeah, sure.
Now, here, let me get this.
What's that?
Huh?
Did you say you had some money?
Well, I have got $10. $10 bill.
Well, maybe I'm wrong, but I thought you said the bandits took all your money. Did I get it wrong?
Well, what I meant is I didn't think I had any money. I found this 10 in my pocket just before I walked in here.
Oh, I see, yeah.
Look, you can see it's all wadded up. Must have been in my pocket for a long time. Just a 10 all wadded up.
Yeah, it's all crumpled up there. You can hardly tell what it is, can you?
Yeah, that's right. But you can see it's a 10.
Mm-hmm.
Sure. It's all wrinkled up. You can see how I missed it.
Yeah. I'll tell you, why don't you put everything in your pockets right here on the table, huh?
Why? What'll that show?
All right, come on, boy.
I haven't got anything in my pockets.
Well, you found the 10. Maybe you'll find something else.
All right, but I don't know what it's going to show. Pocket knife, handkerchief, comb. You got the 10 on the table there. That's all.
Maybe there's something in your coat pocket.
No, I don't carry anything in my coat pockets. Stretches them.
Well, you take a look anyway, huh?
I told you I don't use them. See? Nothing.
How about the inside pocket?
No. Well, there's nothing there.
Let's have a look, huh?
I told you there's nothing there.
Then you won't mind if we have a look.
What's that you got there, Bruce?
That's my wallet. Guess they didn't take it after all. Gee, thanks for finding it. You know, I probably wouldn't have thought to look for it. I just figured that it was gone. Here, let me have it.
Let's see what's in it, huh?
Well, just some cards, personal stuff like that. Nothing you'd be interested in. I forgot all about it. I feel pretty silly. I didn't even know it was there.
Take a look, Joe.
Mm-hmm. You say this is your wallet, is that right, Bruce?
Yeah, it's mine. I told you it's mine. How about let me have it, huh?
There's quite a bit of money in here, Bruce.
Huh?
I don't know, just a glance here. Looks to be about $1,000, doesn't it?
Well, just a minute. I think I can explain that.
Well, there's another thing here I don't think you can explain.
What's that?
The name in the wallet, Kevin Bradley.
You are listening to Dragnet, authentic stories of your police force in action.
With the finding of Kevin Bradley's wallet, the case had taken a new turn. We continued to question Bruce Hamilton, but he insisted that he thought the wallet and the money had been taken by the bandits when they killed the Bradley boy. While I talked to him, Frank went down the hall and contacted the Mexican authorities and gave them the information. He gave them the description of Kevin Bradley and of Bruce Hamilton. They told him that to the best of their knowledge, there were no bandits operating in the vicinity, but they would dispatch a search party to go over the area. They said they would keep us advised of any developments that might arise. Frank also contacted the San Francisco Police Department and gave them the information. They said they'd take care of that end of the investigation. 11:47 a.m. Frank came back to the interrogation room, and we continued to question the Hamilton boy.
Well, I told you all I know. I don't know how the money got there. I was as surprised as you were. I don't understand it. You gotta believe me.
Yeah, well, you're making it pretty tough to believe, Bruce. It's kind of hard to buy the fact that over $1,000 in Kevin's wallet turns up in your pocket and you don't know how it got there.
But it's the truth. I don't know how I can convince you that it's the truth.
Well, there are a couple of other things that aren't clear here.
What? Tell me. I'm not lying. I've got nothing to hide. What's not right? Tell me.
Well, this business of not telling the authorities.
I told you. I was scared that they might not believe me. You can understand that, can't you?
Well, maybe up to a point.
I thought that if I could get to Kevin's mother, then she could take care of it. I didn't know what else to do. And when I got to L.A., I had a chance to think about it, and I couldn't go through with it. I couldn't tell his mother. I couldn't face her.
Bruce, when you described where we could find the body, you said it was about 40 miles down the paved highway, that right?
That's what I said.
Well, how long has it been since you've been to Mexico?
Well, I told you. I just came back from there. Don't you believe anything I've told you?
Well, Joe and I just finished an investigation down in Mexico. Investigation took us about 70 miles south of Ensenada. We found the highway paved for only about 5 miles south. You say 40 miles. How do you explain the difference?
Well, maybe I was wrong about the distance.
Well, you're pretty sure when you first told us about it.
Well, maybe I made a mistake.
There's something else, Bruce. It's a little hazy here.
I told you I want to help anything.
How far south of Ensenada did you say you were?
I said about 40 miles. Now I'm not sure.
But you are sure that it was south of Ensenada?
Well, yeah.
And Kevin was killed on a Saturday night?
That's right.
And you started for the States right away?
That's what I said. I started walking as soon as I found the car was gone.
And you walked all the way to the border?
Well, that's right.
How'd you walk? What route'd you take?
I told you, I stayed off the road. I was afraid of the bandits coming back. I walked along the roadside and then through the hills. I got off the roadside whenever I saw anybody coming.
But you did walk all the way?
Yeah, that's right. All the way from Ensenada to the border.
And it took you how long?
Well, Saturday night and Sunday night. I got a ride in San Diego in the morning.
What time do you figure that you started for the border?
Maybe 11:30, midnight. I don't know for sure.
And you stopped at dawn?
Well, yeah, I stopped and slept. Then I woke up and I started to walk.
And you're asking us to believe that you walked over 100 miles in less than 14 hours, is that right?
Yeah.
And through country like that?
What do you think, that I'm making the whole thing up? Look at my face, my back. Here, look. Does this look like my imagination?
You could have gotten these in a fight with Kevin. Maybe he didn't want you to take the money.
You keep talking about the money. I try to tell you I don't know how the money got in my pocket. I don't know anything about it. You think I killed Kevin, is that right?
Yeah, it looks that way, doesn't it?
But he was my best friend. I had no reason to kill him. He was my friend.
Now, look, son, we better get this thing straight for you. You've opened up a can of beans here. You waltz in here and give us a cock and bull story about this killing. Parts of your story we can't buy. Why are you trying to sell it to us? You lied about the road. You lied about the money. The story about how you walk doesn't ring true. You want to know what I really think, Bruce? I think the whole thing's a lie from start to finish. A lie. Now, let's come off it. Who killed Kevin Bradley?
I don't know. I don't know.
Now, get this straight, Bruce. Did you kill him?
Huh?
Did you kill Kevin Bradley? Is that the reason for this story?
No, I didn't.
Well, somebody did. Can you tell us who?
You're getting me all mixed up.
You're the one that's getting it mixed up, Bruce. We just want to know who killed Kevin Bradley.
We think maybe it was you.
Looks like it might have been.
No, it couldn't be. Leave me alone. I didn't do it.
Why couldn't you have done it? Looks like you did.
Because Kevin Bradley isn't dead.
What's that?
He was never killed. I'm Kevin Bradley.
The boy broke down completely and admitted that the whole thing was a hoax. He said he hadn't been in Mexico at all, but that he'd spent the past week in a downtown hotel working out the story that he planned to tell us. He admitted that the wounds were self-inflicted. He explained that he had scratched his own face and hit himself with a rock to produce the cuts and bruises. He went on to say that he had picked Mexico as the scene of the false killing because he thought the story would be more difficult to trace. Like many citizens, he was unaware of the close cooperation between American law enforcement agencies and the Mexican authorities. We asked him about the existence of a Bruce Hamilton, and he told us there was such a boy in his class at school. 12:50 p.m. The communication had come through from San Francisco, and the teletype said that Mrs. Bradley was en route to Los Angeles to aid in the investigation. When we told Kevin about this, he lapsed into silence and for another hour refused to say anything. 2:05 p.m.
All right, now look, boy, you've been sitting there for an hour and you haven't said a word. If there's something you want to say, we'll listen.
There's nothing to say. I tried. Tried to get away from her. All my life she's told me what to do. I tried to tell her, but I couldn't. Nobody would understand. You don't, you can't. Every time I tried to get away, she'd say something or do something, so I couldn't leave. I was trapped and I didn't know what to do. Then I thought I did know, and even that didn't work. I thought that if you told her I was dead, she'd forget me. Leave me alone. I can't even die right.
Kevin, you're here. I knew what they told me was wrong. I knew you were all right.
Hello, Mother.
What's happened to you, Kevin, darling? Your face, your clothes. Oh, my poor baby, how did this happen? Are you all right? Oh, your poor face all cut. What's happened, Kevin?
It's all right, Mother.
No, it's not all right. I don't know what happened or who did this awful thing, but I'll take care of it. Officer.
Yes, ma'am.
What do you know about this?
I beg your pardon?
What do you know about this? Did you do it? Did you hit this poor boy? Look at this poor face. Just look at it. It's terrible. That's what it is. It's terrible. I mean to find out just what happened here. I'll get to the bottom of this. No, don't you worry, Kevin, baby. Mother's here. She'll take care of you.
Mother, please.
Oh, it's all right, honey. Everything will be all right.
Mother, these officers had nothing to do with it.
Of course not, if you say so, Kevin, baby. Have you called the doctor about this? Have you gotten in touch with someone to take care of his face? Never mind. I'll take him to a doctor. I'll look after him. Poor baby. Mother will look after him.
Mother, please don't.
Now, Kevin, you know that Mother knows what's best. Mother will take care of you.
Stop it. Stop it. Shut up.
Kevin.
I'm sick of it. Tired of it. For 20 years, as long as I can remember, you've taken care of things. Did you ever think I might want to take care of a few things myself? Have you ever thought that I wasn't a kid anymore? I'm an adult. Like it says on the missing report, male, white, American, 22 years, an adult.
All right, take it easy, son.
No, I've tried to say this before, and I've never had the nerve. I've got it now, and I'm going to finish. I'm tired of having you make all the arrangements for me. I'm going to have dates with girls that I want to go out with, not the ones you pick for me. I'm going to get a job and make my own way. I'm going to buy a car, and if I smash it up and me along with it, it's my business. I'll never forgive you for what you've done. You spent 20 years making me an outsider, always on the fringe. I couldn't do the things I wanted to, only the things you wanted me to do. Only the things you thought best. I'm sick of having you make the decisions for me. From here on in, I'm going to make them myself. I tried to kill Kevin Bradley for no reason. You killed him a long time ago. Take a good look at me, Mother. Take a good look and see what you've done. I hate the sight of you. I hate everything about you. Now leave me alone and go away.
All right, take it easy, boy.
It's all right, officer. I understand. Sometimes he gets like this. He doesn't mean it. I know him. All right, Kevin. I'm sure the officers are impressed. Dry your eyes and we'll go home. Do you hear me, Kevin? Stop this foolishness, I said. We're going home.
Yes, Mother, I hear you.
I'm sorry, officers. Embarrassing. I don't know why he does these things. He's always been pretty emotional.
Yes, ma'am.
There's nothing else. We better be going. I want to catch the early plane back to the city. A party planned for tomorrow night. A million things to do. You'll have to help, Kevin. Kevin, do you hear me?
Yes, Mother, I hear you.
Well, then say goodbye to the officers and let's go.
Goodbye, Mr. Friday. Mr. Smith. I'm sorry this all happened.
Yeah, so are we, son.
I tried, Sergeant. Just didn't work, but I did try.
Kevin, let's go. I don't want to miss that plane.
Yes, Mother.
Oh, Sergeant.
Yes, ma'am.
Thank you for giving my boy back to me.
The story you have just heard was true. The names were changed to protect the innocent. On August 9th, the matter was taken before the city attorney for a decision. In the interest of justice, there was no complaint filed against Kevin Allen Bradley. You have just heard Dragnet, a series of authentic cases from official files. Technical advice comes from the Office of Chief of Police W.H. Parker, Los Angeles Police Department. Technical advisors, Captain Jack Donahoe, Sergeant Marty Wynn, Sergeant Vance Brasher. Heard tonight were Herb Ellis, Edwin Bruce, Sarah Selby. Script by John Robinson. Music by Walter Schumann. Hal Gibney speaking. Dragnet, transcribed from Los Angeles. Friday, hear the Mario Lanza Show on NBC.
I want to hear the Mario Lanza Show. Hear some good singing. He sings even better than I do.
You know, maybe if you wait Mario here a Lanza. While, it'll just automatically
Friday?
Come on here.
Yeah, it comes on Friday. That's Dragnet from August 28th, 1952, The Big Test, starring Jack Webb. George Fenneman doing the announcing on that. George Fenneman, of course, was the longtime announcer on You Bet Your Life, and he would be on television with Groucho Marx. And a good episode, originally sponsored by Fatima Cigarettes, but we removed all the cigarette commercials, heard on NBC. Let's take a short break, then it's more here on the WGN Radio Theater. Yep, nobody beats the Anderson Treats.
I've never tasted it.
Then you're an Anderson virgin.
I'm an Anderson virgin, yeah. And I would really like to change that.
Let's see. Raise your hand if you're an Anderson virgin. I am an Anderson virgin.
Oh, Nick.
Nick is not.
No.
Nick DiGilio has had Anderson candies before. Yeah.
Nick, you're going to have to share with us.
So you're going
to
have to.
It's great. It's good stuff.
Good
Maybe
stuff.
We'll get.
Do you like milk chocolate or dark chocolate?
Dark chocolate.
Dark chocolate.
Okay, see?
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. I'm a milk chocolate guy. I think I'm in the minority, though, because most people like the dark chocolate.
I think children like milk chocolate. And your tastes mature,
my IQ
right?
would fit that.
Dark chocolate is actually good for you.
Yes, it
dark
is.
Dark chocolate lowers your blood pressure.
Right.
And it's actually good for you.
Isn't it even help with headaches, too, or something like that?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, I can get rid of a headache. Nick, how are you?
All right,
friend?
Man.
You know, my Aunt Vicky, okay, she loves you. You know, she's
know.
Your biggest fan.
I know, yeah.
And she said she loved when we were talking about Jerry Lewis the other day.
Yeah.
Talking about how you met Jerry Lewis and how I met Jerry Lewis And we had similar stories about him. So she said we have to talk more about people that we've run into in our career, our radio careers. So not tonight because we don't have a lot of time, but we'll have to do that into the into the future.
I've been lucky to have met a lot of people having this job. Yeah. And I know you have too.
Yeah, it's great, isn't it?
Yeah. And I got to work with a couple of really cool people when I did Twilight Zone with you.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I was hanging out with Mike Starr. And
talented
people.
From Goodfellas.
From Goodfellas, that's right.
You know, and...
Hey, security, what are you looking at him?
Yeah, you're looking at him right here. I'm Frenchie. I'm the security.
Frenchie, what are you... Hey, wait, security, what are you looking at?
So what's on the show this morning?
Movies this week.
Yeah.
New movies to talk about. And also Eric Childress just got back from Sundance, so he's going to give us... reviews of all the movies that he saw while he was in Sundance.
Very cool.
He saw, I believe, close to 30 movies while
he
was there.
Oh, my gosh. He overloaded
Here's
on
the
it.
Thing. He goes to, Eric, you know, who reviews movies with me. He's been reviewing for years.
Sure.
He goes to all the film festivals, and he tries to see at least, and this, I'm not kidding, every day that he's at a film festival, he tries to see at the least 5 movies a day.
Oh, my gosh.
A day.
Yeah. That's a lot. You'd need some Anderson chocolates to get through that.
That's right.
Definitely.
Absolutely.
I'm a Raisinette guy, but I might have to switch. I just saw, I'm probably going to say the name wrong, Revenant. I just saw
Revenant.
Revenant. Terrific film.
Yeah.
The cinematography.
That's a fun movie, isn't it?
The grizzly bear scene. Unbelievable.
Never seen anything
And
like
I've never seen a better cowboy... Not cowboy, but they're Indians. It was shooting the arrows and the way the camera angles and the arrows are coming from. Holy moly.
Yeah. Yeah.
Nick, I took your advice 45 years after hearing your conversation about it last week on the radio.
It's pretty great,
I'm glad
isn't
I did.
It?
Yeah.
Charlotte Rampling's great.
Oh, she's
a devastating ending.
Oh, man. I got to check it out.